This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Brian Cole. Dr. Cole's probably one of the most esteemed orthopedic surgeons in the nation. He's also got a great mind for advances in the field and for business thinking as well. So thrilled to have Dr. Cole, who practices at Rush University Health System and also at Surgery Centers, with us today. Brian, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Scott, and I appreciate you asking me to participate in your podcast. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon here at Chicago at Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, and a professor in the Department of Orthopedics and associate chairman of the department, as well as chairman of surgery at Oak Park Hospital. And Midwest Orthopedics at Rush is a 50-person provider group. It's been around for more than 35 years. We were recently selected as in the top five in the country by U.S. News & World Report for orthopedic care. And we're blessed with being number one in the Midwest in Chicago. My specific area of interest, Scott, is I'm also the managing partner of our group. So that has a number of responsibilities, but is in an area of clinical practice, shoulder, elbow, knee surgery, as well as we run the most robust cartilage transplantation and joint preservation center in the country. In addition, I've been the team physician for the Chicago Bulls for the last 16 years and White Sox the last 15 years, co-team physician. And it's a balance between academic practice for me. Research is about 20% of my time in large animal and basic science research, as well as my main passion is just taking care of patients and in the area of shoulder, elbow, knee, and sports medicine.
And so for people that don't know, you're also someone that some of the most famous athletes in the world come to for knee, elbow, and shoulder work. So great to visit with you, and you understate what you do. Magnificent reputation. Talk to us, Brian, about a couple of the big trends in orthopedics. What are you seeing today that are big trends in orthopedics?
So there's a number of things that we're seeing, and I see the biggest macro that we're facing today is and it's timely given the COVID situation, but even independent of COVID, I think we're heading this way, is the transition from inpatient to outpatient care. Clearly the role of the hospital medical center is changing. The role of the independent freestanding ambulatory surgery center is becoming more pervasive. We have now learned to do outpatient procedures such as spine surgery and joint replacement in a setting that patients can go home the same day. Their pain management is incredibly well managed based upon patient expectations and proper medications. The morbidity or side effects of surgery have been reduced to a level that might even actually be less than a hospitalized patient. And that has, I think, transformed our healthcare system. It's left behind some of the sickest and more challenging patients in the hospital system and people who do require monitoring for overnight and so forth. But we've transitioned more than 50% of our arthroplasty joint replacement practice and spine practice is now being done in an ambulatory center. In the past, for example, a shoulder replacement I would do, a patient would stay 2 or 3 days. It's become an hour and a half procedure. It's done in a regional anesthesia. Patient goes home within an hour and a half of their surgery, and they're up walking around that day, and sometimes even working the very next day with very little discomfort. So I think that's the biggest macro change we've had. I think some of the other exciting things that are becoming mainstream are the concept of the use of what we call orthobiologics. Orthobiologics is really a field that is not exactly what the public always thinks it is, such as regenerative medicine and so forth, but it really is a way to sort of augment our body's intrinsic desire to heal, but rather and also find ways that are non-surgical in nature to manage a patient in the office setting, but also using these therapeutics in the surgical setting to augment surgical procedures that may be fraught with less than optimal outcomes because of bad biology. So an evolutionary change in how we manage patients with non-surgical means, such as with the use of growth factor-based therapies, so-called stem cell therapy, which is not for regenerative purposes, but rather to provide growth factors and upstart the environment. and also in the operating room setting. For example, as an adjunct to procedures that are fraught with some failure, such as rotator cuff repair or cartilage transplantation, using these therapeutics to actually augment the outcome. I would say those are two of the most exciting areas. One is a business perspective, and the other is sort of a medical management perspective that has changed over time.
And talk for a moment, one of your areas of expertise is cartilage restoration or cartilage surgery and so forth. And this is an area where somebody's cartilage at one point was so beaten down, there's little you could do with it. Talk for a moment about some of the advances in cartilage restoration or cartilage surgery.
So, you know, in this country, we do over a million joint replacements a year. At least 35 to 50% of these people are less than the age of 65. So there is a all-out search for alternatives to joint replacement. And the area of cartilage transplantation is not necessarily for the exact same population, but we do have a very young, active population who really cannot continue to be active when metal and plastic is the only solution for their problem. Therefore, we have, over the last 20 years, developed a program that utilizes a variety of ways to restore missing cartilage. For example, we have cell-based technologies where we can actually take a sample of cells from an individual as a biopsy and grow it in a laboratory and then reimplant it in areas that are devoid or missing cartilage. Similarly, we can use donors who typically donate their heart, liver, and lungs, but we can actually use pieces of bone and cartilage or meniscus, the other type of cartilage in the knee, to transplant various areas that are devoid of cartilage. It's not only done for the knee, we do it in the shoulder, we do it occasionally in the elbow in our baseball players who have bone and cartilage deficiency. These are typically young patients, as well as the hip and the foot and ankle. So it's a robust program that whereby we treat thousands of patients who otherwise were left with very, very few options. They're not necessarily candidates for knee replacement, but they're still problematic enough that they can't enjoy their active lifestyles without significant pain and activity limitation.
Another subject, Brian, or Dr. Cole, orthopedic practice, a good deal of orthopedics has stayed independent of hospitals in private practice. What's the trend on private practice versus going to work for a health system or elsewise?
In medicine overall, there clearly has been a trend to be hospital employed, in fact, in excess of 70%. But orthopedics has been unique, and I think it's mainly because we have not always had that interdependence on a hospital system. So at this point, while primary care and other specialties may be in the 70% plus range as a hospital employee, orthopedics has stayed in the 30% or lower range, mainly because the kinds of services we offer are largely outpatient based. So the kinds of things we need to manage our patients that range from MRI, X-ray, PT, occupational therapy, bracing, what we call DME, and so forth. All of that can be provided in a freestanding ambulatory setting. And then most importantly, as I alluded to before, with the ability now from a reimbursement point of view to and a medical point of view to safely perform outpatient surgery as it relates to joints and spine, which have traditionally been relegated to the hospital, has really changed the entire dynamic. So I would say, you know, the unique issue that we have, for example, at Midwest Orthopedics at Rush is that we are an academic and private practice. We are a freestanding private practice with an academic affiliation vis-a-vis our research efforts and our fellowship and residency training in the medical students. So it's sort of the perfect balance. I think we're very lucky. Not everyone's able to sort of have that exact type of balance. But suffice it to say, around the country, the ability to practice orthopedic and musculoskeletal medicine is something that is not necessarily relegated to the hospital setting. And while there is an absolute place for hospital-based care in orthopedics for some of our more complex or our patients with comorbidities that need hospital care, we are seeing this dramatic transition and persistence of independent private practice over hospital-based practice or hospital-employed models.
Thank you. You've also got this great synergy with Rush, this great win-win, magnificent independent orthopedic group, magnificent hospital system in terms of research and delivery and so forth. So great synergy. You also have in Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, some of the brightest, most motivated orthopedic surgeons in the country. Talk for a moment about what advice you would have for a young orthopedic surgeon trying to be a great surgeon and be a great professional. What advice would you give to a younger orthopedic surgeon?
Well, Scott, it's a terrific question, and it's something that comes up a lot in terms of, you know, my mentoring of students that are sort of through the academic ladder. And I think the first thing that I always ask these individuals is, you know, if in an ideal world, what do you see yourself doing? What would you like to be doing when you're done? And how would you like the balance to be? And then you sort of say, okay, look, these are the things that are available to you. But, you know, when starting a practice, things have changed enormously. And the one common denominator that you can ask any individual who's gone into medicine is, why are you doing it? And you're going to hear, because I really want to help people. And despite all the challenges that have happened in healthcare, that still is something that's been largely preserved across the sort of the motivation platform of why people do what we do. An individual coming out, unfortunately, the number of people who change jobs in the first year is still approximately 50%. And it is a very unsettling time. And if you have to change, it's a challenge. It's a big life stress, as you can imagine. So I think being very realistic, it really is less about the compensation for these young individuals, because that's fairly uniform across the board. But I think it's about the nature of the group. As you alluded to, our group, we have a number of individuals. Every one of us is fellowship trained and specializes and also spends time in a non-compensated fashion doing research, because it's something they love to do. And we realize it improves patient care. So an individual coming out has to say, look, these are things that are important to me. And then look at the group, look at the makeup of the group, the fabric of the group, the culture, and say, is this something that matches what I want to do? What you got to be careful of is this concept of wishful thinking or fear that I'm just not going to get a job, I'm just going to take this one, because it just doesn't play out well. This is something that should be done for the long haul, and you're better spending the time up front and not, you know, being short-sighted just to say, well, I got the job, I'm just going to take it. Take the time necessary to find who your partners will be. What's been the ingress and egress of people in the practice? They lost a lot of people. How satisfied are the people that are in the practice? What's the void? What's the volume environment like in terms of the ability to build a practice? Is there excess capacity? Are these partners who are really there to help you build your practice? Got to be available, have to be amicable, have to be responsive. With technology that we have today, people can be available pretty much 24/7 in responsiveness to their colleagues and to their patients. So it really is a service business, and people can't forget that. While I have sort of this online presence, if you will, which is thankfully very strong, I will tell you that each and every one of my patients, that I ask them why they're there, and at least 70 to 80% of them say, I'm there because so-and-so was treated by you, they had a great experience, and I'm here for the same experience. So your last patient really begets the next patient. And it is a service industry. Quality is the number one issue, and outcomes are really important. And engaging your patients, finding out why they're coming to you, and making sure you're answering their questions to sort of deliver the unmet need, and being available and responsive are all critically important. It's not unlike anything else, Scott, you know, like in your field with law and so forth. I'd say the same parameters are there. It's just, this is healthcare versus some other profession.
100%. And truly, Dr. Cole, as good as they come, and a true leader in your field, a pleasure to get a chance to visit with you today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Brian, Dr. Cole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Stay safe.